Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. With me once again as guest co-host is our international ambassador to kindness, who is constantly making a positive difference in the lives of others, Gabriella Von Rey. For those of you that didn't hear the show a few months ago, when she was our guest, the topic was kindness. And here's a little background which makes what she has achieved even more remarkable. Gabriella was adopted from a Pakistani orphanage at 3 by a Dutch family. Raised in Holland, she learned about bullies and racism the hard way, but she refused to remain a victim. Instead, she used understanding and empathy to defeat fear and mistrust. Now she is seen on national TV and speaks at school assemblies and corporate events across the U.S., spreading her message, "We as a society have dropped the ball on human kindness. Will you help me pick it up?" Gabriella, I'm so happy to have you with us here again today. And before we get to our topic today, please share what's new and exciting in your life.
New and exciting, always the movement. We're growing exponentially. Yesterday, I interviewed another person. We are, for anyone that wants to find us, first of all, hashtag Dare to Be Kind. And our website is daretobekindmovement.com. Really easy. What our call to action is, something really easy that everyone can do. Take your phones. It's like a full-fledged video. Take a video and start with the words kindness is, and in 10 seconds say what it is and send it to us either through Facebook, social media, in any way, and hashtag us, because we would love to hear what it means to you, because the truth is it means something different for everyone. And what is new is that hopefully by October 1st, we'll start our mini series on YouTube on different topics. And the first one we're hitting on is mixed ethnicities. So children that are from different ethnicities, different parents, and how they have to deal with bullying on the playground.
Now, what's the website they can go to?
daretobekindmovement.com. You go there, you share your story, because the truth is you and I think a lot alike. We do want to make a difference. And as you interview people every single week on this show, I believe just like you that their stories make a difference in other people's lives. It brings us together.
I love it. Now, and for everybody out there, if you couldn't write that down, if you're driving or something, go to our website, go to answersforthefamily.com, and you can get all of that information. Now I'm also, we're doing hand signals here, which is great. So I'm going to introduce our guests today. First of all, they're two dear friends. It's Logan Clark and Martin Cove, and they both live their lives as tough guys. Now, Logan, he's a world-renowned private investigator. Now, Marty is known for his portrayal of Sensei John Kreese in The Karate Kid and now in the Cobra Kai series. And as many of you may know, he's also dealt with many other huge roles, and they've been really physically demanding in both movies and in television. He was in such movies as Rambo First Blood Part 2 and Steel Justice. Now, one of the things that they've done that is very unique is, along with doctors, chemists, and a compounding pharmacy, they've now used their combined knowledge and experience with injuries to help create a pain relief cream that provides more than just a temporary relief. It actually targets the source of the pain to aid in the healing process. Now, in today's show, we will talk about why these two chose the career path that they did, and the ways their bodies have been affected by their careers, and in some cases, the injuries that they've had to face. We will learn about how these two seemingly different men with very different lives came together. Marty, Logan, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan.
Good to be here, Alan. Good to be back.
Yes, and for those of you that have listened to some of the other shows Logan's been on, we've talked about a variety of subjects, including human trafficking and other issues. So one of the things I think we didn't talk about, Logan, was how did you exactly become a private eye, and is that something that you had always imagined yourself doing when you made that decision?
Yeah, like everybody, I watched a bunch of television, and Rockford was my hero. Even though we always got beat up, he was the most realistic private eye of all the television characters. Rockford was a real guy. He was a man's man. It was great. I was a newspaper writer in Hawaii. I saw an ad in a paper for a detective school, and I thought, oh, that'll make me a better private detective, you know. I mean, excuse me, it made me a better writer to learn about investigation, because I kind of wanted to be an investigative reporter. So I went to the school, graduated top of the class, and they called me back in to go undercover in Chrysler Motor Corporation, and I learned I was a thrill slut. I was a junkie. I loved it. I said, yeah, let's go. Give me a badge and a gun. They said, you'll never get a badge and a gun.
Marty, when did you know that acting was the career you wanted to pursue?
A long time ago, in the fourth grade. I remember being in Brooklyn and doing a play, and it was a play, I think, it's the only one I remember in elementary school, was The Golden Goose. And I just remember being on stage and being very comfortable and acting my ass off, just acting, you know, instead of being the role. In those days, you would just, how are you, you know? It was never like, how are you? You touch my sister, you know, and that stuff. Touch my sister. I mean, you're always like doing animation, you know? And I think I just went on that way all the way through till one day someone stopped me and says, you know, I remember we were doing, it was a play, it was a senior show in high school, and the teacher, Gene Frankel, very renowned New York City acting teacher, he told me to do it, the entire role, with a Brooklyn accent. And this was a Greek tragedy, pretty much, but it was funny. And the day before we finished school, we finished rehearsal. The day before opening night, he said, no, I want you to drop the accent and just play this crazy captain without the accent. And it was a fascinating lesson where everything the voice created, the looseness, the bizarre elements of his character, the arrogance, all came through without the accent, because we use accents so many times to create attitudes and behavior. Drop the accent and see if you can do it all without the vernacular change, you know? So, and I decided then, it was so fascinating, I said, boom, I'm just going to go for this, you know, for the rest of my life, you know.
Well, we're glad you did. Now, Logan, I know that you've done some acting as well, and there's a particular quote that you've used. Tell us about the difference between acting and investigating.
Well, what I specialized in for a long time was undercover work. And the only difference in private detective work in general, the only difference between acting and what we do is in what I do, there's no take two.
Yeah.
You do it one time.
Yeah.
You fuck up, you're done.
You're absolutely done. I can understand.
If you screw up, you're done. Yeah.
But undercover, you do take a sort of role.
Oh, absolutely. You take a role on and you become that. Same thing as an actor does, really, when you take on a role. You become that character. You know, you don't act as that character. You are that character. You become it. And you have to do that in undercover. And you have to be extremely, like an actor, you have to be very fast on your feet. You have to be a fast thinker, because if you're doing a play, something goes wrong, the wrong line comes out. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to stand there and stop. You're not going to stop everybody. You just want to roll with it. And you think of the best next line. You know, when I would do stuff, sometimes I'd have to give the line to the other guy. I'd have to give him part of his own line to remind him, so that he'd give a little bit so that my line made sense.
That's perfect. That's exactly what goes on stage.
Exactly. And then, and as undercover, the same thing, kind of, I want to get the conversation to a certain place, but I can't go directly there. I got to go down the block, around the corner, you know, until he brings up that conversation and brings up what I want him to. It's all got to be organic. It's all got to be natural. Same thing as an actor.
But it's interesting that I wish, you know, you think about that. You got to maintain control. And yet as an actor, so many times for me, anxieties would take over. That you feel like it's like doing an improv class. The greatest thing in an improv class is not speaking.
Right.
And just listening, you know. But when I first started acting, I always felt like I'm not doing something. Or I'm not saying something. Oh, God, I'm just not fulfilling the completion of the scene or the intention of the scene. And yet you maintain this control that is quite different than acting because, number one, it's about your life.
Right. Yeah. If you lose control, nobody says cut.
Right.
If they say cut, it's with a knife.
Right. Exactly right. Right, right. There's no trailer to go back to embarrassed.
Yeah, exactly.
But I have a question for both of you. How do you prepare for a role in the movies is one thing. How do you prepare? Is it very different of how you prepare?
I would do what Marty would do. Wouldn't you go, and if you were going to play a drug addict, wouldn't you go someplace with
a drug
addict? Yeah,
and
I would do the same thing.
And you do the same thing. That's what I wondered about.
Yeah, I had a case where I had to be a deaf mute in Libya, and I'd sneak in by boat, and I couldn't speak Arabic or Farsi or anything. And so I had cards made in Saudi Arabia because I knew that this was years ago, before computers and everything. I knew that by a card, if you handed me a card from another country, I spent my life in other countries. I could tell by your card if it was fake or real. I knew if the card was printed in Hong Kong. I knew if it was printed in the Middle East just by touching the card, just by looking at the print on the card. I could tell within 10 seconds. So I knew if you were lying to me. So I had a card printed in Saudi Arabia in Arabic that said, please forgive me, I'm a deaf mute. And I carried those cards through Libya. I had them printed in Saudi Arabia. I carried them through Libya, and I would give them to people. I dressed just like them. And they would go, oh, my golly, no, you cannot speak. No, no, come to the front of the line. You know, you move to the, that's a little Indian, but, you know, you come to the front of the line. No, yeah, and they would help me. They would guide me right to the front of the line because I couldn't speak. It was really neat. It was very neat. So you have to learn.
That's great.
You really become it.
I had to give that to a director when I'm meeting him, and he doesn't like me. And I have, you know, hand him a card.
Him the card. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Marty Cove, and I'm not well, but please just be patient with me.
And I went into bars. I would go into bars and become bars that didn't know me, and I would pretend to be a deaf mute. I'd bring a little tablet. I'd go in. I'd order a drink. I did it in right here in Sherman Oaks on Woodman Avenue. There was a little bar, the Chimney Sweep. I used to go in the Chimney Sweep, and I'd go in there, and I'd pass these little notes and stuff, and they would thought, oh,
and people are
would buy
nicer.
Me drinks. Mm-hmm. They were so nice to me. They go, oh, no, he can't talk. You know, but I'd write all these notes and everything. You just had to make sure that if a rockin' song came on the radio, you didn't tapping your foot.
That's very funny, right?
Yeah.
Right. But that, I would imagine in these really, you know, life-or-death situations, and, I mean, I played mercenaries, and I try to adapt to that thought pattern and it's hard. It's really hard because you have, as human beings, we have a need to expound on something instinctively and talk about it. If there's a question here, we talk about it. But in your case, that's what's fascinating about seeing a really cool movie about a detective.
The less said, the better.
Exactly. The first lesson you learn in acting is less is more.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an archive. You know,
and you control, and you can do things in acting. Like I've done it in detective cases. Like I was doing a movie in the Philippines one time, and the director told me I was at a table with four people, and he said, Logan, I want you to control the scene. He said, they're not going to know it, but I want you to control. I want everybody in the audience to be looking at you in this scene. And he said, just figure out a way to do it, but don't steal the scene. Don't be obvious. So this was early, he told me this. So when we sat down and we did the scene, I smoked in those days. And when we did the scene, We sat down and we were all talking, and I had a wood match. I made sure I went and looked and had the guy give me a wood match, and I lit a wood match, and I was talking to him, and I would take the match and put it up next to my cigarette, but just before I'd light it, I'd keep talking, and I'd go, you know, another thing. Blah, blah, blah. And then I, you know, talk, and then I'd go back to light my cigarette again, but I wouldn't do it. I'd say, oh, and don't forget, you know, that we got to do, and everybody at the table, and I knew the audience was looking at that match in my finger, burned closer and closer to my fingers.
Oh, yeah, because they all...
And I kept going, and it got closer, and everybody was transfixed on, he's going to burn his finger.
Yeah.
And right before it got there, when I wanted to make my point, I said, then I'll meet you at 8.
It was that a long just, match.
Oh, it was a wood match.
It was a long match.
And you could hear a sigh almost from everybody that I didn't burn like that. Okay.
Steve McQueen used to do that all the time. They would always complain about, you know, I'm reading an autobiography about him, and they would always complain of Steve McQueen trying to, you know, constantly upstage people.
Right.
You know, he would, I mean, he'd be in the background doing exactly like that, lighting a match or cleaning the sweat off the brim of his hat or doing something that would totally, you know, in The Magnificent Seven happened a lot. And, you know, he wasn't quite a star yet, but even when he was big star, he would do that. But he was always so interesting.
Right.
You know, it was never dialogue with Steve McQueen. It was always its eyes and intention.
Think of Papillon.
Yeah, Papillon. Oh, yeah. They're remaking. There's a remake of Papillon.
I just heard that. Yeah.
I was.
Who's doing it?
I've forgotten. I think it's Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah. Tom Hardy.
He's a wonderful actor.
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
And I just saw the promo the other day, and I was amazed, too, because by far, Steve McQueen did The Enemy of the People, something he always wanted to do, Dostoevsky, and Papillon was the best thing.
Yes.
Best thing.
Phenomenal.
Definitely.
Yeah. Great stuff.
You know what? We have a listener question coming in. And again, I want to thank the listeners that take the time to send in a question. We have one that's an email. So this actually came in last night. And in fact, we get a lot of things from teachers, and they'll say, you know, we really appreciate the fact you do the show, but you're doing it at 11 o'clock and we're in school. We're teaching at this time. Mm-hmm. So they'll send it in the night before. So this is one of the ones that has come in. This one reads, Mr. Cove, I've seen you in many roles, but loved your performance most in The Karate Kid. What roles were your favorite to play and why? And this is from Kathy G. from Huntsville, Alabama.
Alabama. I love Alabama. to answer the question, there's a couple of roles that I really enjoyed. And they're different, totally different. Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner, Larry Kasdan directing. It was a week in Santa Fe, and, you know, Kevin, the movie was so authentic. The movie, the details were so correct. And Tombstone, which was its rival, was different. It was more of a entertaining kind of film and, you know, a little more glitz. But the reality of Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner and Gene Hackman and Quaid, he did Doc Holliday. It was brilliant. Darker, but brilliant. Mm. And I enjoyed that so much, being there with people who loved to make Westerns. It was like what I just finished with Quentin Tarantino. It was a Western, you know, and everybody loves to work for these people.
Yeah.
Because Kevin loves to make Westerns, and anything he's ever done, he somehow turns it into a Western, you know,
right.
Even a contemporary piece, you know,
or a baseball movie,
or a baseball movie, you know, and he's great to work for. He's just heaven, you know, and Larry's the same thing. So it was a tough guy, and it was someone who really lived. His name was Ed Ross, and he lived in that period of time. And it was the scene where Wyatt Earp feels his oats and becomes this legend. He proves to himself that he is a great gunfighter. And they throw a cue ball in my throat and knock me out. But he really feels his power at that point. And it's how the scene was introduced to me by Larry Kasdan. I want you to do this. And I never thought it was big enough. And he says, I'm going to put you in the promo. And I said, Larry, how do you know what's going to be in the promo? He says, you do this part for me and you'll see. I said, it's a year and a half away. Bottom line was, a year and a half later, that scene was in the promo because he's a visionary director. So that film and another movie called White Light, which is a movie I did, directed by the late Al Waxman, who was on Lieutenant Samuels on Cagney and Lacey with me for years. And we struck a wonderful relationship. And the movie is about a down and out policeman. And he has a vision on the deathbed of a woman giving him unconditional love and affection. And he revives himself and spends the rest of the movie searching for this woman to see if she was a vision or a reality from the operating table. Anyway, it's like vulnerability and love and passion versus, you know, the tough guy.
Yeah, the tough guy. Now, you mentioned in that scene, obviously, you get hit in the throat. One of the things that we've talked about in the past has to do with injuries. I mean, was that one of those things to where you may have gotten more injured, or what are some of the things you've had to deal with, and really for both of you, in the line of duty?
Carl Logan, I know you had a variety of things happen to you.
You can tell by looking.
I did.
Is
some
that because of the scars all over me?
No, it's a couple of the weapons I had, and they missed you.
Yeah.
But go ahead, tell them. Go ahead.
There's a lot of them. I got blown off a ship. I was in the Philippines trying to arrange a ship to rescue a kidnapped person, and I didn't realize the boat, the 110-foot boat that I was renting from this Captain Bob, actually was known for carrying tons of marijuana. And I guess they still had marijuana in the bottom of the boat. They were going to rent it to us to take us over to Hong Kong. And the next thing I knew, I heard military guys coming down the plankway, and they started blowing off machine guns and threw hand grenades. I got blown off the boat. Had a lump the size of a golf ball on my arm, damn near drowned. I've just had a lot of things, drugged, locked up, locked in the trunk of a car, pushed over a cliff. I've had a lot of injuries.
Did any of these things ever make you feel, because I'll do it to a degree, you know, deep down inside you think as an actor when in a moment like that, you think you're going to perish.
Yes.
But in your game, you really could perish.
Oh yeah.
Do you ever feel that desperate feeling that the next step is death? Mm-hmm. Do you ever? What happens to you emotionally? Do you pull right out of it and go for the survival mode, or do you wallow in it?
No, there's about a millionth of a second that kind of like your life flashes. In the sense that when I was young and it happened, I was like, "You got to be kidding me." I'm 23. It's going to end now, you know, and that's just sort of a flash. And then the next thing that comes is, no, I'm not going to do that. And then just fight for survival. As you get older, you know, when those things happen, you sort of get pondering about it. I was in prison in Poland, beat every day. And I thought, oh, you know, I had pushed the envelope too far. I was probably here for the rest of my life and going to die. But usually you always, that's the first thought, and then the second thought, unless it happens so fast, you don't even get that chance. It happens, so you're being overrun or something, it's happened so fast that you just react, and you just got to get out of the situation. But you don't wallow too much in anything. You don't have time. You know, when I got pushed over the cliff, and I landed in a tree, as we went over the cliff, I was in the trunk, I knew that was it, I was dying, because I was on a cliff, they pushed the car over. Fortunately, there was a huge tree right underneath it, and the car just went about 4 feet and landed in the tree and just kind of balanced in the tree. And I was in the trunk in the car, and I could tell I was somewhere, but it wasn't very sturdy.
And you weren't dead.
Yeah, and I wasn't dead. Right. You know, I was in the trunk of the car, but what do? Do you panic? I'm a little claustrophobic being in the trunk of the car, but you can't yell or scream or kick, you know, but I just kind of kept screaming. And luckily, tourists came, you know, 5-6 hours later.
Yeah, so, but was that one in the line of duty or a jealous husband?
No, that was the line of duty. I was repoing a car.
But that's why it's
I like the jealous husband there.
Yeah.
That's why it's so valuable to, you know, research roles, which to me, the process of research and development and rehearsal is often more interesting than the role of acting, than the event of acting, because there's a lot of tension that goes on there with, you know, it's just a natural occurrence. But research and sitting and talking to you, which is why there's a script about you.
Yeah.
Because it is so formidable and so rewarding for the actor to see people who really do what they have to play in real life. Mm-hmm. And the innuendos, and I mean, like in Karate Kid, you know, I watched the my trainer, the stunt coordinator, Pat Johnson, who ran with Chuck Norris in the 60s and 70s, and he trained all of us separately. But Miyagi, he trained with Ralph, and then, you know, the Cobra Kai, and then myself. But just recently, I've thought about it, how I really took his ki. I took how he put his hands in his belt and his gi. I took how he stood, like, you know, with arms crossed. And these things are what people remember.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they only were acquired from observing and talking to him.
Right. Was that Chuck's brother?
It wasn't Chuck's brother. No, it was Pat Johnson, Chuck's partner. He ran with him in the 60s and 70s in the whole tournament scene worldwide. But to me, it's the most rewarding thing to talk to, you know, people who really do it for a living, whether it's, you know, Chief Snowden or somebody like that, you know, because you can get, you know, I had to play, I had to play a captain, and I remember sitting in a parking lot because I couldn't get down there, just sitting in a parking lot, calling him and milking his brain for 2 hours, and I just pulled off the road because it was traffic and I was late, but I wanted to get the information, so I just pulled off in some parking lot and chatted with him from my car for 2 hours. And it was so rewarding. It set my character up so well, you know, and it's invaluable.
Especially the mental process. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The mental process.
Yeah. That's the key. I mean, it's all less is more.
Yep. I had an acting coach one time that said, you know, there's no such thing as acting. He said, acting is reacting.
So it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But people like Meryl Streep who actually have to go unconscious in a scene and go unconscious. And I remember Sidney Pollack told a story where she had to fall asleep in the scene or appear that she's falling asleep, and she did. And he told everybody in the crew, leave her alone, she'll get up in about 5 or 10 minutes. She actually
went to sleep,
finished the dialogue, went to sleep. I mean, that's brilliance.
Wild.
That's brilliance
in
concentration.
That's beautiful.
It's the best thing going. I mean, we all strive for that level.
All right. We are here with Gabriella Von Rey. We are here with Martin Cove and Logan Clark. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about some rumors that Marty's done a lot of his own stunts and how those went. We'll be right back.
Or didn't go.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Would you like to lean back?
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. With us is Gabriella Von Rey, Martin Cove, and Logan Clark. And when we took a break, Marty, we were talking a little bit about, you know, a lot of the things that both you and Logan have done in the acting field. We know that, or at least I've heard, you've done a lot of your own stunts. Share with us a little bit about some of the things that you've done, why you did it, because there's a psychological reason, I think, why an actor chooses to do their own stunts.
And the ones that don't go exactly the way they're supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. But you never allude to that. You know?
Okay.
You never allude as your shoulder's drooping.
I
like
planned
it,
on that.
You know. I mean, but it goes back as far as, you know, the first movie. I went to see a retrospective of Martin Cove movies, road movies and things, and White Line Fever was playing at the Egyptian in Hollywood. And I went to see it, and I watched myself take punches. And I would loft myself up in the air. Now, if you take a punch at this age, you just fall down.
Right.
You know, you just fall down. I've got to do a whole bunch of fight scenes in the new Cobra Kai series, and I've seen some of them, and I'm just going to fall down when I take it. I'm not going to loft myself up in the air.
Bounce off the car
and stuff. Because it's never written that way. But as a young actor, when I did White Line Fever, 1975, was my first studio movie, and I remember it. I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, that's why my back is so out.
Yep.
That's why my shoulder hurts so much now. Because that wasn't only that movie. It was every other movie. I would just, have very limited dialogue. You're new. You want to show exactly how much you love what you're doing and love this script. And the bottom line is you get wrapped up in adrenaline as well. Mm-hmm. And so you hurt yourself. And you don't really feel it. It's like the football players. And, we all know, I was hanging with Kenny Stabler and John Matusak and those people when I first got to town. And, they hurt.
Yeah.
They hurt first thing in the morning. And when they get up to play on Sunday, they're given all the different medications to minimize the pain. And that's what adrenaline does to you as an actor. It minimizes the pain and the excitement of doing it right. And the director telling you it's great is wonderful. When you get back to the trailer, if you've pulled a muscle or, hurt a muscle or broken a toe, I did a movie called City of Angels, and I remember it was a great paying job, and I was a heavy 1940s two-hour pilot, and I played football on a Sunday and broke my elbow. Well, I went to the doctor that Sunday, Dr. Rosenfeld, put a cast on it. You can zip on and zip off. And I was able to wear these big 40s outfits with this cast. Never told anybody for 3 weeks that I had a broken elbow. And somehow I got away with it. But they would have fired me in a second because you got to do some action. And knock on wood, I didn't have to do too much offensive action to aggravate the broken bone in the elbow, But these things carry on to this day.
But you do it because your livelihood is at stake, too.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
And you want to impress the director.
And you want to impress.
Yeah,
and you have the adrenaline. You have three things going.
In the early days, now it's not. Now you just want to fulfill. Like, I have to go to Atlanta. We're doing Cobra Kai. And there's a lot. There's some fighting going on. And I'm working with my regular trainer, working with the karate instructor. And karate is, I've got to be as formidable as I was 30 years ago because that's the storyline. It's a great writers, great, terrific writers who pick up, Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka and myself 30 years later, after Karate Kid 3. So the bottom line is you still have to be for yourself formidable in karate. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to hurt because this body is not what it was. I'm in good shape, but it's not what it was. So I'm not lofting myself in anything. I'm going down like a normal, everyday person. And there are, multiple stories like that.
Didn't you do the wrong window one time?
No, I didn't do that. I did that. I mean, they didn't break the window. That was in Karate Kid 2. I hit the window. Yeah, I mean, there's an example. You hit the window, and the special effects fellow says it's going to break at the bottom and shatter an inch before you get there. So you do it once, twice, and you lunge, punch, and then you realize it's not happening because you keep snapping and hitting the window, and it's not breaking. And then finally he guaranteed it to me. It didn't work. I went right through the glass in the top of Karate Kid 2 and shards of glass sticking in my wrist. And, it was a special effects guy's fault.
Yep.
They patch you up an hour later, you're going it again. So I go again, and still the window doesn't break an inch in front of me, doesn't shatter.
It's supposed to be sugar water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, this was real glass, but he was shattering it. And I turned to the director, and I said, John Appleton's directing. I said, this is not the hand of Arnold in The Terminator. I said, this is real flesh. So he wrapped, and going in is real Marty Cove flesh breaking the window.
Right.
Coming out, we shot the next day, coming out the window. But there are, accidents that happen all the time. I could tell you a dozen accidents. We don't have the time, but there are things that just happen not because of neglect, just because of, you know, God's will and accidental circumstances.
Now, what did you do back then to patch yourself up?
Then they put new skin on me across the knuckles, did a lot of makeup, and an hour later, I was doing it again. So this is 1986, right? And I'm doing it again. And here you are. You want to fulfill your obligation to your peers. You want to be the macho guy. I don't give a shit about being macho right now. There's enough credits to follow me. But the thing is that you want to fulfill your obligation to the script, to the fans, mm-hmm. to yourself as an actor, so you don't complain. Just like a football player rarely complains, always walks off the field, you know, and you don't know what's wrong with him. You just know that they stopped the action, so it's something. But, you know, it's hard to do when the body is brittle. Mm-hmm. It's okay to do when it's very young. Not that I'm brittle, but to bring us back to what you created, is that there's got to be some remedy we find, something to take, and you don't want to take medication, you know, because that hampers your performance and your thought process. You want to take something that works and that's simple. And, I mean, that's why, you know, Maurice Cobra Cove worked for me, because I spent years trying to figure out, and God knows how many products and medications and painkillers and all this, and, you know, and then one day I just stopped and I said, there's got to be something out there. And then Logan introduced this product to me and we tried it, and it was really effective on muscles and on ligaments and places that one recently hurt or recently aggravated from the days where I was lofting myself.
Lofting myself.
I love that word.
Yeah. Bouncing against cars, flying off of them.
Yeah. And so, and Logan, and you had said that you had gone through quite a few trials. So share with a little bit about the trials that finally got to the point of this product.
Well, I was hired in 2010 to investigate this, literally. I didn't know anything about it, to find out if it's real, CBD, the whole cannabis thing, and Parkinson's disease and all that. And to make a long story short, I mean, we spent several years on it with you, you know, a whole bunch of us, really investigating for a client to find. And then we realized it's real, Charlotte's Web, all of this stuff. So then we started really working on different aspects. But in the last couple of years, we were working on a CBD, playing around. And that's when Marty came and explained about his arm, and that a motorboat had cut his arm, almost cut his arm off. When he was in the water, and the muscle atrophy and everything. So I worked with, I don't know, a dozen or two dozen manufacturers and tried with this, and then worked with my daughter. And then I found these guys, man, Ernie, Paula, and Dr. Bob, and they just had this great factory. And I said, hey, can we do a little tweak here and do this? And, you know, Marty Cove, and we all just got along really well. And we messed around, and they already had wonderful product. And I just wanted one for Marty that was just a little stronger, you know, and had all the cool stuff they have in it. And it's gorgeous. And it started working. I have, you know, a lot of sores and bumps and bruises. And I for me, it was necessity. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it for Marty's necessity. And I think what we came out with really, really helps. I use it night and mornings, man. It takes tremendous. I mean, arthritis in your hands, anything. It's wow. It's a tremendous product.
Where can people get it?
There's a website, MartysCobraCove.com, and you can go on there. You can call in. We're working on the ClickPay thing right now. I think it's just in the next couple of weeks going to be loaded on. But you can call up and you can use your credit card and stuff on the phone. You just have to call the number right now. But you can get it there. There are 34 chiropractic offices across the United States that we sub-label to. Okay. And they, all of their doctors use it. 100% chiropractic, it's called. And they, all of their patients love it. We have this, the cream, and we have the tincture, which is like Charlotte's Web, only ours is less expensive than Charlotte's Web. but it works great.
You know, we have another listener question that's coming in, and this one says, your PI guest life sounds very interesting. Please ask if there have been any movies done on his life, and if not, there certainly should be. This is from Mark S. in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, there's one. There's a movie being done called 13 Angels, and it's a true story of my first big case. And I believe, hopefully, Marty's going to be in it. The writers want him. The writers are the Oscar-nominated writers that wrote The Fighter, starring Mark Wahlberg, and they wrote Patriot's Day and many other projects, but they were Oscar-nominated. And they've written it, and Tarantino's producer, Erica Steinberg, she produced Inglourious Basterds, Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2. She has just come on board. So we have producers, directors. They're doing the director's notes on the script right now. And we hope to be filming. I'm hoping to be filming the first of next year. It's a great movie. Great movie.
That's good.
Finally, after lots of years.
I would love to ask a question because I don't know you guys like Alan does, but I'm observing you guys here and I'm listening just as riveted as the listeners back home. I hear an enormous friendship between you two. I just hear it, not just because of the product, but everything you guys are doing. How did you guys create the friendship? How did you guys get together? Because I don't know that.
Go ahead, Golding. You can tell us.
Was it the lunches?
Cowboy lunches.
Cowboy lunches was the first time.
With Bo Hopkins.
Bo Hopkins.
Okay.
God.
Bo Hopkins is getting an award in Newhall in the Cowboy Hall of Fame down there. Yeah.
And name some of the other
when
guys.
Is that?
And you guys were both there.
Yeah, we would go. Dave, the chief of police, would go.
Okay.
And a bunch of actors. A bunch of actors. What's the name of some of the actors? Bob Forrester.
Well, Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah.
And Robert Forrester and, and Bo Hopkins, myself, and a lot of other people in the business.
The guy from Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
An R.
Walking Tall.
No. Walking Dead. Yeah. From
Walking Dead.
Michael Rooker.
Yes, Michael, of course. Michael. Yes, Michael. Right. Well, Michael's.
Anyway, we met that, and that was on Sunset Boulevard at the Saddle Ranch Club.
Yeah, we meet
there every month and have lunches, and then it just one thing to another, and we just hit it off. We're just a couple of crazy, wild and crazy guys.
Yeah, we compared bruises.
We started comparing scars, on Jaws.
Scars. It was like that movie. What was that movie?
Jaws.
Jaws. They compare scars, but then the other one was Rock and Roller.
Oh yeah.
With the two Russian guys in the car, and they were all different.
Gunshot wounds.
Gunshot wound, knife stabbing, spears. They were all comparing their wounds from being in military prisons. Yeah. You know, in Eastern Europe, it was hysterical. You know.
And but, you realize you have a lot of comment.
Okay. Yeah, no, but I hear it.
Yeah,
I mean,
can you
I hear.
Want to see one? Yeah. Logan has one there, the same one I hear.
I hear the friendship in your voices, so that's great to know how that started.
It's
thank
two,
you.
Two mercenaries, that's it.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. And poets.
We have another listener. This one is a comment. This one says, I just wanted to share that I met Mr. Cove at an event and he couldn't have been nicer. He took the time to pose for a picture with me and my family. Thanks for being a class act. And this is from John M. from Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, it's very, thank you, John. I mean, Phoenix is a very special place. You know, I love Arizona. I mean, Tombstone. I've been there so many times just to walk the streets. Tucson, I did White Line Fever at. It was my first movie. You're going to Pinnacle Pete's going to Old Tucson there.
Oh, yeah.
And just that's where they made so many Westerns. And I'm such a big Western fan. And Phoenix is my good friend Rex Harden, who's the great-great-grandnephew of John Wesley Harden.
Mm-hmm.
He lives. So we go there a lot. And have a wonderful, wonderful times in Arizona. But that was very interesting, that autograph show, because we were showing a short, and it was a terrific short called Show No Mercy. And Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio came. We also participated in the autograph show. But they showed this 10-minute short, which was wonderful. It was with my son, Jesse. And it was just sensational, and very creative short. And the people there respond very well to The Karate Kid, and we had such a good time. But there are some families, families come up to you at the table, and you know, you sign autographs, and the average person, you chat a little bit. But when the family comes with little kids, and real little kids in strollers, and, you know, most of the time, a lot of them, they can't buy pictures or even, you know, make much dialogue because they're busy with two little kids. That's what the times I find it so exciting. So I'll pick the kid up out of the stroller, put him on my shoulder, hold him, and I'll take these pictures with the whole family. And I tell them not to smile. And I say, just be tough. And just, and the whole family, including the little kid who's
like
four,
yeah.
Right.
You know, and the parents say, don't smile. And and a lot of times he can't do it. He smiles. And I look at the little kid, don't smile. And I do that, you know. And so the kid, he's frightened to death.
Really?
Yeah. John Kreese said, don't smile. And so we take these pictures, and that's what we do. And it makes the parents, you know, it's so important to them. And for me, it's not a big deal just to do that. And I try to do that with families, with little kids. So it's so memorable because these kids don't know who I am. But in 5 years, they'll watch the movie, and it's an iconic picture. So their parents, you know, will introduce it to them. And that's what he's referring to. And it happens mostly with kids, because I have a, you know, 11-month-old grandson, and, you know, if I don't see him every day, I just lose it, you know. So you met him today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So and in fact, I was there in Phoenix, and I remember with one of the families, when you looked at one of them and they were smiling and he didn't want them smiling, and you said, show no mercy.
That's it. And they kind of like, and sometimes the women can't do this picture without smiling. So I say, bite the inside of your lip, you know.
All right.
How many times I've been on stage and you were talking about stage earlier, about laughing. You lose concentration, you start laughing on stage. That's happened so many times. The only way to get out of it is to bite the inside of the lip. And then you stop laughing.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times that happened at the early days of acting, you know.
So I know I'm looking up. We've only got just probably about 2.5 minutes. Logan, I've gone to the website, obviously, because I am involved as well. Let's talk a little bit about some of the professionals that are out there using it. You mentioned the people at 100% Chiropractic. But what are some of the professionals out there that are using it, and what are some of their stories that they're saying in regards to the product?
There's doctors, golfers, weightlifter, Peebles. Is it Johnny?
Johnny Peebles.
Yeah, Johnny Peebles. Real well-known weightlifter. He uses it. If you test, you don't have to worry about testing positive or anything because it's simply CBD and, you know, all the other good stuff. And in this also, there's a pharmaceutical compound. The thing that gives us an edge is that there's an actual FDA-approved pharmaceutical compound in this. You don't need a prescription for it, but that's the in the base. And then the CBD and the eucalyptus, all the oils, lavender, are all in there, you know, around it. But doctors, golfers, when they have trouble with their hips, their swing, the letters are on the website. They're just phenomenal. I mean, people can go back to what they're doing. It actually helps. There are people that there's pain. Marty has pain, this bone on bone, and the cream can't, you know, do much for it because it's bone on bone. And it's just deeper pain. For that, hopefully the tincture, you know, helps them more because it gets in deeper. But for the average soccer player, weightlifter, surfer, senior homes, especially senior homes love this. Just the sores, aches, pains, joints, muscles, arthritis, that's where it really kicks in.
I can even imagine people that give massages because their wrists are always doing anyone that does a maneuver.
Deep tissue massage.
Right?
Yeah, people that do deep tissue massage use it.
Good to know. Yeah, I know lots of people like that.
35 deep tissue masseuses. Yeah.
And you recommend to put this twice a day?
Yeah, put it on before you go to bed and put it on in the morning, and you usually won't have pain during the day if you do that. You can have it periodically. We have the small one to carry around.
Does it reduce the inflammation of the joint too?
Yes, because of the these essential oils in it.
Okay,
and it also has inflammation, you know, lowering antibodies or whatever you want to call them in it. Yeah, it's for all of it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it works. It works. All right. Combination.
Everybody, thank you so much for being here. Wow. Again, the website again.
MartysCobraCove.com. Just like Marty's name.
Okay. So again, and if you're driving out there, you can't write this down, go to answersforthefamily.com. We will have all the information there. Gabriella, remind them again how they can get to the site. The site of kindness.
Really easy. You do hashtag dare to be kind. That's one way. And otherwise, you go directly to the website, daretobekindmovement.com.
All right. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.